Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now going to cover Jeremiah chapter 25, which I will entitle Babylon Reigns for 70 Years. Now, notice I did not entitle the chapter Jerusalem is Captive for 70 Years. Most people call this the 70-year captivity of Jerusalem. There's a problem with that, as I'll point out when we get there. We don't have to worry about when this prophecy was given because Jeremiah tells us right here in verses 1 through 3, so we'll just begin with no introduction. Jeremiah 25, verses 1 through 3, the word came to Jeremiah concerning all the people of Judah. Before, Jeremiah was sent to the king of Judah only in Jeremiah 22. Now he's speaking to all the people, not just the kings and the shepherds and the rulers. The word came to Jeremiah concerning all the people of Judah in the fourth year of Jehoiakim. Now, Jehoiakim ruled from 609 to 598. The fourth year of Jehoiakim, therefore, is 609 minus 4, which is 605 B.C. Now, that's a very famous year because that was the same year as the famous Battle of Carchemish, where Nebuchadnezzar, the Babylonian general, he defeats the remnants of the Assyrian army, the remains of the Assyrian Empire. The Assyrians took a long time to die, but after Carchemish in 605, they were gone, they were toast, they were history. And after that Battle of Carchemish in 605, Nebuchadnezzar II goes back to Babylon and becomes Nebuchadnezzar II, becomes the king, his father Nabopolassar having just died. So if we take 609, the year that Eliakim started out as king of Judah, and we don't count that because it's a part of a year, and then we go 608, 607, 606, 605, that's 4 years. Now in Daniel 1 verse 1, it's called the third year of Jehoiakim. Daniel 1:1, in the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and laid siege to it. That was after he had finished beating the remnants of the Assyrian army. He also beat the Egyptians who were helping the Assyrians. Nebuchadnezzar comes down and basically takes over Judah and sends Daniel into exile. Now, Daniel, in chapter 1, verse 1, says it was the third year of Jehoiakim, not the fourth year. That's easy to reconcile. Jehoiakim was installed at the end of 609, so we don't count 609. Nebuchadnezzar was installed as king of his kingdom, Babylon, in 605. So if you leave out the fractional parts of 609 and 605, you've got 3 years. 608, 607, 606, and we don't count the little bit of 605. So Daniel left out the fractional part of 605. Jeremiah included it, and so Jeremiah ends up with 4 years. It's the same year, 605 B.C. This is the first year of King Nebuchadnezzar, who, as I said, left the Battle of Carchemish and left Judah in 605 and went back to Babylon, carrying Daniel with him. He goes back to Babylon. That was his first year, as Jeremiah says here in verse 1, which accords with secular history. We go to verse 2. So Jeremiah the prophet said to all the people of Judah and to all those living in Jerusalem, for 23 years from the 13th year of Josiah. Now Josiah reigned from 640 to 609. From the 13th year of Josiah, son of Ammon, who ruled from 640 to 640. King of Judah, until this very day, which is 605. The word of the Lord has come to me, and I have spoken to you again and again, but you have not listened. Now let's calculate that 23 years mentioned in verse 3. Jeremiah starts prophesying in the middle of Josiah's reign. He prophesied over the last 18 or 19 years of Josiah's reign, and then there were 4 years of Jehoiakim's reign, and that adds up to 23 years. Well, how do we calculate that Jeremiah prophesied during the last 19 years of Josiah's reign? Well, Jeremiah 1:2 and chapter 25, verse 3 here says that Jeremiah started prophesying in the 13th year of Josiah's reign. So Josiah starts reigning in 640. We take 13 years away. We get 627. And remember, those years can be off 1 or 2 years, depending on whether you include or exclude the fractional parts at the beginning or end of the date range. So that puts us about 627. And then that's when Jeremiah started prophesying. And then at the end of Josiah's reign in 609, we take 627 minus 609, and we get 18 years prophesying at the end of Josiah's reign, which is close enough to 19. We add the 4 years of Jehoiakim's reign, and we get 22, which is close enough to 23, allowing for the fractions at the beginning or end of the date range. And so, no problems in the dates. I shudder when I come across dates because it's so complicated, but these are relatively easy, thank the Lord. And so Jeremiah says, the word of the Lord has come to me, and I've spoken to you again and again, but you have not listened. I know how that feels. People don't like listening to the truth. They shun it, like a politician shunning fiscal responsibility. They don't want to hear it. We go now to Jeremiah 25, verses 4 through 10. Jeremiah continues speaking to all the people of Jerusalem. And though the Lord has sent all his servants the prophets to you again and again, you have not listened or paid any attention. They said, turn now, each of you, from your evil ways. The they, meaning the prophets, have said, turn from your evil ways and your evil practices, and you can stay in the land the Lord gave you and your fathers forever and ever. I haven't thought about which prophets that might be. We think about Isaiah. He had a lot of prophecies about the Babylonians coming. And there were lots of minor prophets, which we haven't gotten to yet. But the people of Judah had been prophesied to many, many times to stay away from the evil practices. And if you do that, at verse 5, you can stay in the land the Lord gave to you and your fathers forever and ever. That means for a long, long time, not eternally forever. Now, the promise to stay is the opposite of the curse that forces you to leave. If you disobey, you will leave. This is in the curses of the law. We read this in Deuteronomy 28:36. The Lord will bring you and your king that you have appointed to a nation neither you nor your fathers have known, and there you will worship other gods of wood and stone. Well, that was fulfilled entirely, completely by the Babylonians. Deuteronomy 28, verses 49 through 50. The Lord will bring a nation from far away, from the ends of the earth, to swoop down on you like an eagle, a nation whose language you don't understand, a ruthless nation, showing no respect for the old and not sparing the young. All of that was promised to the Israelites when the law was read from the mountain or the hilltops surrounding on the north and south sides of the valley of Shechem. The blessings and curses of the law were read to the people by the priest, and the people chose to get cursed. So Jeremiah, quoting the prophets, says that the prophets have said that you can stay in the land if you obey. Don't follow the gods, verse 6, and worship them. Do not provoke me to anger with what your hands have made, that I will not harm you. Verse 7, but you did not listen to me, declares the Lord. And you have provoked me with what your hands have made, i.e. your idols, and you have brought harm to yourselves. They did it, not God. The people brought harm to themselves. Verse 8, therefore the Lord Almighty says this, because you have not listened to my words, I will summon all the peoples of the north. Now the north, of course, is where invading armies came into Israel because they couldn't come from the west because there's the Mediterranean Sea there, and they couldn't come from the east because there's the Arabian Desert there between the Jordan and the Euphrates River. They couldn't come from the south because that's the Negev Desert, Arabia Petraea, and Edom a little bit to the south of that. Desert all around, sea to the west, so the only place they could come is from the north, and that's over the Euphrates River, as the Euphrates River has bent, running from east to west as the Euphrates River, as you get to the head of the Euphrates River up there in the mountain ranges in Syria. And so that's why Jeremiah is always saying about armies coming from the north. Here it's, I will summon all the peoples of the north, or the nations of the north. Well, actually, it doesn't say nations. It says the peoples, but that's the same thing, people groups. Poole and Benson say that this refers to all the kingdoms who were subject to Babylon and who were placed to the north of Judah. Now, who that might be, I don't know. Syria. Ellicott says it's all the mingled races, Scythians and others, who owned the sway of the Chaldean king. Well, I don't know who the people groups, the nation groups, were living to the north of Israel at the time. I'll just say the Syrians. So all of those people are going to be coming from the north, and my servant Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, is going to be coming from the north. Now, this is not a prophetic acknowledgement of Nebuchadnezzar. Jeremiah knows Nebuchadnezzar from history because Nebuchadnezzar was well established by that time, fighting the Assyrians, and in fact, he had come down to Judah to take Daniel off into captivity, and so Jeremiah knew who Nebuchadnezzar was. But Nebuchadnezzar had not wiped out the kingdom yet. He had just taken off some exiles, and so the people of Israel know who Nebuchadnezzar is, the people of Judah, and Jeremiah is saying, and he's going to get you. I will bring them against this land, the peoples of the north, the peoples of the Babylonian Empire. I will bring them against this land and its inhabitants, against all the surrounding nations. It was not just Judah that was destroyed by the Babylonian Empire. All the other nations around Israel were destroyed too. We'll see that as we go through this chapter. But just as a sneak preview, we can mention Egypt, Edom, Moab, Ammon, Syria, the Philistines, they're going down too. Jeremiah continues, or actually Yahweh continues, I will completely destroy them and make them an object of horror and scorn. Now that phrase, object of horror, shows up in the curses in the law, Deuteronomy 28:37, you will become an object of horror, scorn, and ridicule among all the peoples where the Lord will drive you. You will become an object of horror. Well, also, the nations around Israel will become an object of horror because of what the Babylonians are going to do to them. These nations will become an everlasting ruin. Now, everlasting, of course, that's holam. I think it's holam. I didn't look it up. That word shows up so many times, but it can mean for a long, long time. It does not necessarily mean eternal. I mean, Egypt's still there today. Egypt is not eternally ruined. I can't say the same thing for Ammon and Moab or Edom or the Philistines, but Egypt's still there. So everlasting means for a long time. Verse 10, I will banish them from the sounds of joy and gladness, the voices of bride and bridegroom, the sound of millstones and the light of the lamp. That's typical rhetoric showing the joy of everyday life. Not going to be any sounds of civilization. It's only going to be the sounds of silence. Let me go back to this word everlasting. It can't mean eternal. I can prove it just from this chapter, because Jeremiah is prophesying that Nebuchadnezzar is going to come and destroy not only the surrounding nations, which I mentioned, but also in verse 9, Yahweh says, I will bring them, the peoples of the north, and Nebuchadnezzar. In other words, I will bring the Babylonians against this land and its inhabitants. That's Judah. And I will make them an everlasting ruin. Well, we know that Judah did not become an eternal ruin because it was rebuilt. 539, 538, the return decree of Cyrus, the Jews came back unto Ezra, rebuilt the temple, and Israel is here today, as a matter of fact, not eternally ruined. So we've got to be careful when we see that word, everlasting or forever. Holam is the typical Hebrew word for that concept. It can mean eternal, but it doesn't necessarily mean eternal. Sometimes it just means for a long time. We go now to Jeremiah 25, verses 11 through 14. Yahweh is still speaking, and he says, this whole country, that's Judah, will become a desolate wasteland, and these nations will serve the king of Babylon 70 years. Now, the nations that are mentioned, they're all listed in Jeremiah 46 through 51. I'll talk about these nations in just a minute, but again, for another sneak preview, the nations that are going to be captured by the king of Babylon and serve the king of Babylon would be the Egyptians, the Philistines to the west, the Moabites to the south, east, the Edomites to the south, the Arabians to the far southeast in the Arabian Peninsula, the Persians even further to the east, east of the Mesopotamian Valley, and also the Babylonians in the Mesopotamian Valley. So all around, these nations are going to be serving the king of Babylon. Now, I said the Babylonians, the king of Babylon is going to rule all those nations, which historically happened. And of course, the king of Babylon is also going to rule the Babylonian people, so we can include them too. And these nations will serve the king of Babylon 70 years. Now, this is the famous 70-year prophecy of Babylon. It is usually expressed as the Jews were prophesied by Jeremiah to be in captivity for 70 years in Babylon. That is not what Jeremiah said. He said the nations will serve the king of Babylon 70 years. He did not say that Judah or the Jews would serve the king of Babylon 70 years. He just didn't say it. Now, this 70-year period is also mentioned in Jeremiah 29, verse 10. For this is what the Lord says, when 70 years for Babylon, not for Israel, not for Judah, when 70 years for Babylon are complete, I will attend to you and will confirm my promise concerning you to restore you to this place. Now, why do I emphasize that so much? I even had to change the title of this chapter. I was going to call it the 70-year captivity in Babylon, and I realized, no, that's not what Jeremiah said, and that messes up the calculation of the 70 years. So I changed the name of the chapter to Babylon Reigns for 70 Years. I'll show you why it makes a difference. Now, the beginning and end date of that 70-year period is controversial. John Gill has about 5 ways to calculate it, but I'm going to give you the way that I think it should be calculated. Many of the commentators, like Colin Delitzsch, Jameson Fawcett and Brown, Gill and Clark, say that the beginning date is this 4th year of Jehoiakim, where we are now, which is 605. And the reason they do that is because that's when Jeremiah is giving the prophecy. But the problem with that is if you run down from 605 to the time of the end of the Babylonian Empire, when Cyrus beat them in 539, that's not 70 years. From 539 back to 600 is 61 years, and then go back to 605, that's 66 years. That's not 70 years. Well, Cyrus's decree, I think, is not exactly dated. It might be the year of the defeat of Babylon in 539. Then Cyrus says, okay, Jews, you can go back to Israel. That might happen in 539. It could have been 538. Some people say 537. I've even got one source that says 536. Well, it's still not 70 years. Let's say you take the extreme date of 536. That's 64 years. And then 5 years of the 7th century B.C. going back to 605, that's 69. It's getting close. But most people don't say the decree was 536. Most people have the decree. Wikipedia, as a matter of fact, has it at 539. Of course, you know, I don't know how accurate Wikipedia is. But you see that the solutions that take the beginning date at 605 have a problem that they're short a little bit. But they're short, but does that matter? Well, here's what the NET Bible Study, the NET Bible Study, has in its notes. If the period be reckoned from the date of the first deportation in the fourth year of Jehoiakim, that's 605, but they say the NET Bible Study note says 606. Well, nobody else says 606. They all say 605. So there's they got an extra year out of that out of the beginning end till the decree of Cyrus 536. Well, that's 3 years later than most people say that the decree was issued. So that's how they get their extra 4 years. If you do that, the prediction was fulfilled to a year. Well, again, these ancient dates are enough to drive you crazy, and I'm not a scholar, an ancient Near Eastern scholar, so I can't argue one way or the other, but that sounds a little bit suspicious to me. We have another problem with using 605 going down to Cyrus's decree date as opposed to the defeat of the Babylonian Empire in 539. Well, the first problem is you don't know when Cyrus's decree was, actually. People disagree on that, but even if you did know that it, for example, was 536, why would you use Cyrus's decree date? Jeremiah says here in our passage, these nations will serve the king of Babylon 70 years. Well, Babylon's not going to be in existence in 536. Babylon went down in 539. So why are you using Cyrus's decree date to get your extra years in order to make 70? By the time of Cyrus's decree, if you assume that Cyrus's decree was, for example, in 606, by the time of Cyrus's decree, if you assume, for example, that Cyrus's decree was all the way down in 536 or even 537 or even 538, Babylon's not in existence. Babylon went out of existence in 539. So I don't buy the argument that Daniel's 70 years starts in 605. So let's take the date of 609 as the start date, and then let's take the end date when Cyrus the Great beats the Babylonians in 539. You notice that 609 and 539 is 70 years. Subtract them out, you get 70 years. 9 years in the 7th century B.C. plus 61 years in the 6th century B.C. You add them together, that's 70 years. Why would we choose 609? Because that was the beginning of Babylonia's domination over the nations. Remember, the prophecy says, for 70 years, for Babylon are complete in Jeremiah 29:10, and in Jeremiah 25:11, these nations will serve the king of Babylon 70 years. Not just Judah serving Babylon, or not just the captives of the exile in 605 serving Babylon, but all the other nations serving Babylon. Judah started serving Babylon in 605 when Nebuchadnezzar came down and made Judah subservient to him, but all the other nations became subservient to Babylon in 609. Now, how do I prove that? Well, let me read you from Wikipedia. Wikipedia is going to show that Egypt and Assyria as allies were destroyed by Babylonia in 609. Wikipedia says this, quote, while Necho II, that's the Pharaoh of Egypt, gained control of the kingdom of Judah in 609, you recall he came up from Egypt. Josiah foolishly decided he wanted to stop him because Josiah was scared of the Assyrians and Necho was going to ally himself with the Assyrians against the Babylonians, and Josiah got himself killed in the Valley of Megiddo in 609. So when Necho II gained control of the kingdom of Judah in 609, the Battle of Megiddo, the Assyrian forces lost to the Babylonians and the Medes at the fall of Haran. That's in Syria, so that's an important date, 609. The Assyrians had moved their capital after Nineveh had fallen to Haran in Syria, and then they lost again to the Babylonians, and Necho II allied with the Assyrians. And so they fell again to the Babylonians, the Assyrians did, having allied themselves with the Egyptians. And after this, Wikipedia continues, after which Assyria largely ceased to exist as an independent state. Now, there were a few scattered remnants of the army that fought at Carchemish against the Babylonians 4 years later in 605. But 609, Assyria largely ceased to exist as an independent state. Now, if Assyria has ceased to exist as an independent state, who's the top dog in the Middle East now, in the ancient Near East? It's Babylonia. All the nations, which I've mentioned earlier, all those nations are now subject to the Babylonian Empire. Now, what does our prophecy say? Jeremiah says, these nations will serve the king of Babylon 70 years. They started serving Babylon in 609 B.C. Edom and Moab and Philistia and Egypt and Syria and the Arabians, etc., etc. So the Jews were not exactly in captivity for 70 years, but the nations served the king of Babylon 70 years. Now, there have been some other attempts to avoid this problem of the calculation of the 70 years. For example, Colin Delitzsch takes the period starting at 605 when Jeremiah is giving this prophecy down to 538. He doesn't use 539. He comes up with 68 and he says, well, let's just round it off for the sake of symbolism. Well, I don't like that. I think the 609 date works nicely. Now in verse 12, Yahweh continues, but when the 70 years are fulfilled, I will punish the king of Babylon and his nation. So Babylon's going to rule the nations for 70 years and then Babylon's going to get punished. They're going to get punished for their guilt, declares the Lord, and will make it desolate forever. Well, the Persians did that, and they did make it desolate forever, that in that sense, eternally, because Babylon's never come back. I will bring upon that land all the things I have spoken against it, all that are written in this book and prophesied by Jeremiah against all the nations. Now, where does Jeremiah prophesy against all the nations? Well, it could be all the disasters which immediately follow in our passage here. Verses 15 through 26, we're going to be talking about lots of nations and places and cities and so forth. Or it could just refer to what Jeremiah says at the very end of his book in chapters 46 through 51. Now, to get a feel for this, I went through the Holman Christian Study Bible and just took the headings. And I'm going to list all those headings for you in chapters 46 through 51. Prophecies against the nations. Prophecies against Egypt. Prophecies against the Philistines, prophecies against Moab, prophecies against Ammon, prophecies against Edom, prophecies against Damascus, that's the capital of Syria, prophecies against Kedar and Hazar, we need to talk about that a little bit. Hazar is mentioned four times in the Bible, but the relevant reference here is to a district in Arabia, that's according to ChristianAnswers.net. Arabia, of course, is the northern end of the Saudi Arabian Peninsula, which extends in between the Jordan and Euphrates River. Kedar is also in Arabia. If you look at the map, it's right there at the southern tip of Israel, the desert of Shur, which separates Egypt and Israel. That's Arabia Petraea, the Romans used to call it. And then as you go eastward, you go through the south of the Negev, through Edom, through that area between the southern end of the Dead and the northern tip of the Red, between the Dead and the Red Sea, and then on into the northern part of the Arabian Peninsula. So basically, we'll just say the Arabians, whoever's living out there in the desert, the Bedouins, they got prophesied against too by Jeremiah. So that basically takes care of everybody. So the Babylonians conquered all these people at the same time they conquered Jerusalem. So these nations are the ones that were wiped out by Babylon near the same time Jerusalem was wiped out. As Barnes says, this prophecy forms an impressive statement of the manner in which the new kingdom of Babylon was to execute Yahweh's wrath upon the nations far and near. In verse 14, Yahweh continues in Jeremiah 25, they, those are the nations, themselves will be enslaved. Yahweh continues in Jeremiah 25, verse 14, they, the Babylonians, themselves will be enslaved by many nations and great kings. The many nations will be the many, many nations that are in the Persian Empire that conquered the Babylonians in 539. The great kings will be not only Cyrus the Great, but also his great Persian successors that followed and controlled the Chaldeans, the Babylonian people, in the Mesopotamian Valley. God says, I will repay them according to their deeds and the work of their hands. So even though the Babylonians were an instrument in God's hand, a rod to execute wrath upon his children, the people of Israel, the people of Judah, nonetheless, God's going to pay them back for their evil because they were idolaters too. We go now to Jeremiah 25, verses 15 through 26. This is what the Lord, the God of Israel, said to me. That's Jeremiah. Jeremiah is saying, this is what God said to me, Jeremiah. Take from my hand this cup filled with the wine of my wrath and make all the nations to whom I send you drink it. When you hear that word nations, think of all those nations I rattled out for you. Now, when Jeremiah sees this, he sees this in a vision. He sees a cup filled with wine. The wine is said by Yahweh to symbolize God's wrath. Verse 16, when they drink it, in other words, Jeremiah is supposed to offer the wine to the nations. When they drink it, they will stagger and go mad because of the sword I will send among them. So I took the cup from the Lord's hand and made all the nations to whom he sent me drink it. Now, of course, you think, how can a nation drink? I'm sure it's talking about the leaders of the nations. And he's doing this in a vision. Verse 18, Jerusalem and the towns of Judah, its kings and officials, to make them a ruin and an object of horror. There's that phrase, object of horror, again, comes out of Deuteronomy 28. An object of horror and scorn and cursing as they are today. So notice it's not only Jerusalem, it's also the towns of Judah, the towns surrounding Judah that are going to go down in destruction. It's kings and officials, those are the leaders of Judah, and the kings in particular were Jehoiakim, 609 to 598. Jehoahaz, 598 to 597, and Zedekiah, 597 to 586. And all of their families, the princes of the blood, the nobles, they're going down. They're made an object of horror, just as the law said in the curses. They are a scorn. They are an object of scorn. They are an object of cursing, as they are today. Now, that today must have been written after Jeremiah wrote his prophecy. Gill and Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown say this clause might have been added by Jeremiah after the captivity, or by Jeremiah's secretary Baruch, or maybe by Ezra, who was the chief honcho on the return to Jerusalem in 538, or it could be some other editor who collected Jeremiah's prophecies and put them into one volume. Now in verse 19, Jeremiah 25, Jeremiah continues to list all the nations who were drinking that cup containing the wine of God's wrath. Verse 19, Pharaoh, king of Egypt. Now, in the very year this prophecy was delivered, 605 BC, the judgments of God actually took place on the king of Egypt. We read that in Jeremiah 46, verse 2. About Egypt and the army of Pharaoh Necho, Egypt's king, which was defeated at Carchemish in 605, on the Euphrates River by Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, in the fourth year of Judah's king Jehoiakim, son of Josiah. And so there, Egypt is mentioned as having suffered defeat by Babylon at the Battle of Carchemish. But that was not the only time an Egyptian pharaoh was going to be defeated. It was foretold in Jeremiah 44, verse 30. This is what the Lord says. I am about to hand over Pharaoh Hophra, Egypt's king, to his enemies, to those who want to take his life, just as I handed over Judah's king Zedekiah to Babylon's king Nebuchadnezzar. And we'll talk about Hophra when we get to Jeremiah 44, but verse 19 shows that Egypt is going to be judged by the Babylonians, or by God using the Babylonians. Verse 20, and all the foreign people in Egypt are going to be judged. Well, who are all the foreign people? Here's four options. Gill says it was a mixed people in the land of Egypt, such as came out of it along with the Israelites. Remember that mixed multitude, I think the King James has it, when the Jews started out on their exodus. Option number two from John Gill. The foreign people perhaps could be a mixture of people of different nations that dwelt by the seacoast, either the Mediterranean Sea or the Red Sea. Those are the two seacoasts of Egypt. I guess people from different nations travel and go to seaports, and that's why they would be some foreign people there. That's typical of seaports. Option number three. These foreign people who were going to be judged were mercenary foreign troops serving under Pharaoh Hophra in the time of Jeremiah. The employment of those foreigners provoked the native Egyptians to overthrow Pharaoh Hophra. Again, we'll talk about Hophra later. Option number four, Psammaticus, who was the father of the famous Necho II, who killed King Josiah in 609 BC. Psammaticus also had given a settlement in Egypt to Ionian and Carian adventurers, according to the Greek historian Herodotus. Ionia is on the northwestern coast of present-day Turkey, where the city of Troy was, and Caria is on the southwestern coast of Asia Minor, present-day Turkey, near the island of Rhodes. And apparently the father of Pharaoh Necho had given a settlement to these people in Egypt, and that could be what's being referred to. It doesn't really matter. The point is that not only the natives, but the aliens are also going down to the Babylonians. We continue in verse 20 with all the nations who were going down before the Babylonians, all the kings of Uz. Well, where is Uz? Of course, people don't know exactly where Uz is. You remember Job is from the land of Uz. Adam Clark says Uz is a part of Arabia near to Idumea. Nobody knows where the Uz of Job 1:1 is. Adam Clark says Uz is a part of Arabia near to Idumea. Idumea is Edom, south of the Dead Sea, on both sides of the Arab Fault down there, present-day Jordan. I think that's where maps will often put Uz. Verse 20, Jeremiah mentions Ashkelon as a place that's going to get eaten up by the Babylonians. Ashkelon, of course, is one of the five cities of Philistia. Philistia occupied the western part of the Holy Land, Canaan land, right there towards the Mediterranean coast. Three of those five cities were actually on the coast. Two of them were inland a little bit. Jeremiah actually tells us that Ashkelon is going down in chapter 47. In verse 5, Jeremiah says, baldness is coming to Gaza. Ashkelon will become silent, a remnant of their valley. How long will you gash yourself? In other words, how long will you people of Ashkelon slash yourself up? Because that's what they did at funerals. They cut their flesh. Jeremiah 47:7. How can it rest when the Lord has given it a command? He has assigned it against Ashkelon and the shore of the sea. Ashkelon was on the Mediterranean Sea. Verse 20, Gaza is also mentioned as a place that the Babylonians are going to gobble up. Gaza's destruction was also foretold in Jeremiah 47. Verse 1 of Jeremiah 47, this is the word of the Lord that came to Jeremiah the prophet about the Philistines before Pharaoh defeated Gaza. Jeremiah 47:5, baldness is coming to Gaza. Jeremiah talks about in verse 1 the Egyptians beating Gaza, but later on he's talking about baldness coming to Gaza. Verse 20, at the end of verse 20, we have Ashdod is wiped out. Ashdod, of course, is one of the five Philistine cities. It's the same as that which is called Azotus in the New Testament. Now, there's an interesting phrase here. All that are left of Ashdod, it sounds like a remnant of the Ashdodians, were wiped out by the Babylonians. How do we explain that? Well, here's what John Gill says. Because the remains only of a once very strong and fortified place, that's why. But Ashdod was so weakened and wasted by Psammaticus, king of Egypt, and a blockade of it for the space of 9 and 20 years before he took it, that when he had got in it, it was but as the carcass of a city to that to what it was before. So after Psammaticus left it a rump, the Babylonians took what was left. Edom, Moab, and Ammon go down in verse 21. We know about Edom, Moab, and Adam. Edom is to the south of the Dead Sea. Moab is to the east of the Dead Sea, in the southern part of the Dead Sea. Ammon is to the north of Moab. Verse 22, all the kings of Tyre and Sidon, those are famous cities. Tyre right to the north of Israel on the Mediterranean coast. Sidon just to the north of Tyre, famous Phoenician cities that sent trade out all over the Mediterranean, including to Carthage and to Tartessus, probably in Spain. Jeremiah also foretold the ruin of Tyre and Sidon. We read in Jeremiah 47, verse 4, on account of the day that is coming to destroy all the Philistines, to cut off from Tyre and Sidon every remaining ally. Indeed, the Lord is about to destroy the Philistines, the remnant of the islands of Kaphtor. Kaphtor is probably Cyprus. That's probably where the Philistines came from. A lot of the ancient Near East historians say that that's probably a reasonable assumption, but that is tangential to what I was just talking about, Tyre and Sidon. Tyre and Sidon lose their allies, the Philistines. Now, in verse 23, Jeremiah lists three more places that are going to get wiped out by the Babylonians. Dedan, Tema, and Buz. Those are places either in Edom or just to the east of Edom in the Arabian Desert. Remember, Edom is south of the Dead Sea, crossing the Arab Valley, that valley which runs from the southern tip of the Dead Sea all the way down to the northern tip of the Gulf of Aqaba. So Dedan, Tema, and Buz, they are to go down. Jeremiah also prophesies their destruction in Jeremiah 49, verses 7 through 8. About Edom, this is what the Lord of hosts says. Is there no longer wisdom in Teman? Has counsel perished from the prudent? Has their wisdom rotted away? Run, turn back, lie low, residents of Dedan, for I will bring Esau's calamity on him at the time I punish him. Esau is Edom. I need to back up and pick up a place that I mentioned in verse 22, the kings of the coastlands across the sea. What is that? Well, coastlands is sometimes translated as islands, and since we have moved up the Mediterranean coast already, talking about Ashdod, Tyre, and Sidon, the coastlands probably or branching out further across the Mediterranean Sea, maybe to places like Rhodes and Cyprus and Crete, three big islands on the southern coast of Anatolia, present-day Turkey. And, of course, there's a million other islands in the Mediterranean Sea, the Aegean Islands, for example, Sardinia, Corsica, the Balearic Islands. There's islands everywhere in the Mediterranean Sea. I don't know how much of them got conquered by the Babylonians, however. That would be something interesting to look into, how far Nebuchadnezzar got. I'm not an expert on ancient Near Eastern history, so I really don't know. Verse 24, again talking about the people who are going to get wiped out, all the kings of Arabia. We've already mentioned Dedan, Tema, and Buz as being in Arabia. And all the kings of the foreign people who live in the desert. That would refer to Arabians or mixed people, the Bedouins who wander all around the Arabian desert, I suppose. We read in Jeremiah 49, verses 28 and 29 about Kedar. That's a place in Arabia. And the kingdoms of Hazar. Now, there's different Hazors in the Old Testament. There was one that was a place in Arabia, which Nebuchadnezzar, Babylon's king, defeated. So you see, Babylon went down into the Arabian Peninsula and wiped out people down there too. This is what the Lord says, rise up, go against Kedar, and destroy the people of the east. That would be Babylon doing that. They will take their tents and their flocks along with their tent curtains and all their equipment. They will take their camels for themselves. They will call out to them, terrors on every side. Continuing with the list of nations who were drinking the cup of God's wrath, the cup containing the wine of God's wrath. Verse 25, all the kings of Zimri. Where is Zimri? Well, there's some other speculations that might be in the Arabian desert, but BibleAtlas.org has Zimri at Susa. Susa, of course, was the capital of Elam, the ancient kingdom which preceded the Persian Empire at the southwestern corner of what later became the Persian Empire, right to the east of the Tigris River, down there near the head of the Persian Gulf. Zimri is the same as Susa, according to BibleAtlas.org. We'll take their word for it. Next, in verse 25, Elam is said to drink of the wine of the cup of God's wrath. Elam is on the western end, actually the southwestern end of Persia. Sometimes it's used for Persia in general, but we'll just take it as the ancient kingdom of Elam. They're going down by the Babylonians. The Babylonians had them at this time. And, of course, Media, which is at the northern end of the Iranian plateau, famous place. Medes allied with the Persians, of course, the Medo-Persian Empire. Verse 26, all the kings of the north, they are going down too. Well, who are the kings of the north? Gill and Clark say they're the kings of the Syrians. That makes sense to me. All the kings near and far in verse 26, one after the other. All the kingdoms on the face of the earth, both near and far. Well, the near kingdoms could be Syria, according to Clark. Far kingdoms could go as far as Bactria, which is somewhere near Afghanistan today, out there in Central Asia, on the northeastern edge of India. I don't know how far the Babylonian Empire went. But at any rate, Jeremiah has basically covered the whole ancient Near East. He says Babylon's going to get them all. In the middle of verse 26, Jeremiah just summarizes all the kingdoms on the face of the earth. Now, of course, Jeremiah didn't know about the whole earth. The ancient Near East is where most of the earth was. And then he finishes in verse 26, and after all of them, all of these nations which I've just gone through, the king of Shishak will drink it too. Now this is interesting. King of Shishak, there is no place called Shishak that anybody knows of. No maps, no references, nothing. So what is Shishak? Well, I'll give you a couple of options. One option is that Shishak was an ancient king of Babylon who was deified after his death. I got that from some commentator. I don't know where he got it from. But this is the option I like. Shishak is written in code and means Babel, of course, which is Babylon. As Albert Barnes says, Jerome says this. He says that this is the name Babel written in cipher, the letters being transposed. Another example occurs in Jeremiah 51:1, where the words, the heart of my risers up, become the Chaldeans. A code. Well, let's look further and see what Wikipedia says about this code. Shishak is equivalent to Babel or Babylon, according to a secret mode of writing practiced among the Jews of unknown antiquity, which consisted in substituting the last letter of the Hebrew alphabet for the first, the next to the last one for the second, and so on. Thus the letters sh, sh, become b, b, l, forming the word Babel. So Shishak, there were no vowels. So S-H-S-H-C-H is sh, sh, k. Shishak becomes b, b, l, Babel. This code is called the Atbash Cipher. The city Shishak does not appear on any map nor in any other documents save the book of Jeremiah. The Atbash Cipher was applied, and out of Shishak came the word Babel. This is supposed to be confirmed by a reference to Jeremiah 51:41, where Shishak and Babylon are in parallel clauses. There seems to be no reason to doubt that Babylon is here intended by that name. A similar instance of this Hebrew cryptographic method occurs in Jeremiah 51, where Leb Kamai is code for Chaldea. Barnes has quoted Leb Kamai as the heart of my rises up, which is a strange phrase, but it really means Chaldea. I don't know why Jeremiah would be writing in code. I can't speculate as to why, but I thought that was quite interesting. We go now to Jeremiah 25, verses 27 through 31. Yahweh is still telling Jeremiah what to tell the people of Jerusalem. Verse 27, then tell them, this is what the Lord Almighty, the God of Israel, says. Drink, get drunk and vomit, and fall to rise no more because of the sword I will send among you. But if they refuse to take the cup from your hand and drink, tell them, this is what the Lord Almighty says. You must drink it. See, I am beginning to bring disaster on the city that bears my name, and you will indeed, and will you indeed go unpunished? You will not go unpunished. For I am calling down a sword upon all who live on the earth, declares the Lord Almighty. Now prophesy all these words against them and say to them, the Lord will roar from on high. He will thunder from his holy dwelling and roar mightily against his land. He will shout like those who tread the grapes. Shout against all who live on the earth. The tumult will resound to the ends of the earth, for the Lord will bring charges against the nations. He will bring judgment on all mankind and put the wicked to the sword, declares the Lord. So in verse 27, Jeremiah is to tell them, the nations of the earth, drink, get drunk, and vomit. They're drinking from the cup that holds the wine of God's wrath. That would make one get drunk and vomit. So this is a lot of typical hellfire and damnation rhetoric. Verse 29, Yahweh says, see, I'm beginning to bring disaster on the city that bears my name. That's Jerusalem. Why does Jerusalem bear God's name? Because Yahweh had chosen Jerusalem, 2 Chronicles 6:6. But I have chosen Jerusalem so that my name will be there. And I have chosen David to be over my people Israel. Well, Yahweh lived in Jerusalem. He had a temple there. Shekinah glory there in the Holy of Holies. Rhetorical question. Verse 29. Will you indeed go unpunished? No, the nations of the world will not go unpunished. Because the sword's coming upon all who live on the earth. Every nation that's around there in the ancient Near East is going to get whacked. Verse 30. God tells Jeremiah, prophesy. Say to them, God's going to roar from on high, thunder from his holy dwelling, roar mightily against his land. Thunder sounds like somebody yelling with a deep roar. Roar mightily against his land. That's the land of Judah as well as all the nations that are around. Both are encompassed within the coming judgment. He will shout like those who tread the grapes. Workmen treading in the winepress encourage one another to be more cheerful in their work. And so they shout, stomp on those grapes. Shout against all who live on the earth. Now, that earth could be land, haaretz, the Hebrew is. Most of the translations I looked at have earth. It could be land. The Young's Literal Translation does have land. Shout against all who live on the land. That would mean the judgment that's coming on Jerusalem. But I think the context, although it could be Jerusalem, because he just mentioned that disaster's coming on the city that bears my name, Jerusalem. So it could be that God is asking or saying that he is going to shout against all who live on the land of Israel. But most of the translations think it's talking about all the nations that Jeremiah is prophesying against. Verse 31, the tumult will resound to the ends of the earth, for the Lord will bring charges against the nations. A little legal procedure there, bring charges. And that, of course, happened when Babylon came and wiped them all out, right around 586 B.C. when Jerusalem got wiped out. End of verse 31, God will bring judgment on all mankind and put the wicked to the sword, declares the Lord. We go now to Jeremiah 25, verses 32 through 38, and we will finish this audio. This is what the Lord Almighty says. Look, disaster is spreading from nation to nation. In other words, one country after another was rolled up by Babylon, and then Babylon was rolled up by Medo-Persia, and then Medo-Persia was rolled up by Alexander the Great, and then Alexander the Great was rolled up by the Romans. A mighty storm is rising from the ends of the earth. It all started out with Babylon. At that time, those slain by the Lord will be everywhere, from one end of the earth to the other. They will not be mourned or gathered up or buried, but will be like refuse lying on the ground. Trash. Weep and wail, you shepherds. That would be the leaders of these pagan nations. Roll in the dust, you leaders of the flock, for your time to be slaughtered has come. You will fall and be shattered like fine pottery. Pottery breaks very easily. Shattered. The shepherds will have nowhere to flee, the leaders of the flock no place to escape. The flock is the picture, the metaphor for the citizens of a nation, and the leaders of the nation don't have anywhere to go. Hear the cry of the shepherds, the wailing of the leaders of the flock, for the Lord is destroying their pasture, their nation. The peaceful meadows will be laid waste because of the fierce anger of the Lord. Like a lion, he will leave his lair. Now, that could either be God leaving heaven in order to come down and do judgment, and I think that's what it is, because the previous two verses mention the Lord, Yahweh. He could refer to Nebuchadnezzar leaving Babylon like a lion. He, Nebuchadnezzar, will leave his lair in Babylon, could be, but I think it's talking about God leaving heaven and their land. That means the land of the nations who are being judged by Yahweh, by Babylon, and their land will become desolate because of the sword of the oppressor and because of the Lord's fierce anger. Babylon wields the sword. They are the sword of the oppressor. But, of course, God is behind what Babylon is doing, and he's angry because of all the idolatry. Ladies and gentlemen, we have now finished Jeremiah 25, and we are now prepared in our next audio to go to Jeremiah 26, which I will entitle Jeremiah Threatened with Death. I hope to be with you in our next audio, and I hope you enjoyed this one.